2000 UTC. Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, August 8th, 2023. Hundreds of returnees are stranded in Bor without food.
The last food we get on 15th of July. The one was provided by SRRC. Yeah, children, as you heard, I'm very close to them now. You can hear the children are crying at this time, looking for what they can eat.
And the UN says health conditions are deteriorating across Sudan as the fighting rages on.
As many families have been on the move for weeks with very little food and medicine, rising malnutrition rates, disease outbreaks, and related deaths continue to be observed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of returnees to South Sudan, many of them coming from Sudan, are stranded in Bor without food or shelter as they wait to continue their journey to their final destinations. The head of the returnees says several children are severely malnourished. The chairman of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, or RRC, in Djungalay, says state officials have run out of food for the returnees. Munyang David Mayar has this report for VOA from Bor.
Stephen Quell, leader of the returnees in Djongloy State, says more than 300 returnees living in Bor lack food and shelter, and many children have been going for days without food.
The last food we get on 15th of July. The one was provided by SRRC. Yeah, children, as you heard, I'm very close to them now. You can hear the children are crying at this time, looking for what they can eat. Yesterday, those who are minorities, they went to the shop, the children. They were given a slumpiness. When other children see, they cry because there is no other food. They are looking for that slumpiness to share.
Quell says he last received food 2 days ago when a local chief in the community invited him to his house for a meal. While he has the privilege of sharing food with locals at times, Quell says several other returnees have gone for days without food. Aside from being hungry, he says returnees lack shelter in the ongoing rainy season in Bor.
We are brought here in Tibet, the headquarters of police. This is whereby we are accommodated in two rooms, 2 hours. One is about to collapse. Some people, they stay in one part of it. During the daytime, we just put the children inside because if there's a rain, they can stay in those tukul. And the adult people, they stay outside. They're sleeping at night. Most of us, we are sleeping outside. As you heard from RRC, it's about rain. And you can see the people are hanging around the tukul outside. We are just hiding behind the tukul.
Quell says most of the returnees in Bor plan to proceed to their areas of origin in northern Djongley State. He is urging the government and humanitarian agencies to facilitate their journey so they can reach their villages, mostly in Urur County. Michael Madinga Kweth, chairperson of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Djongley State, says his office has given returnees food but has now run out of resources in Bor.
We have been supporting them with food from the state's Ministry of Finance. But for the last 3 days now, we have not managed to give them anything. And these people are starving. We are appealing to the National Task Force, the RRC, at the state, at the nationals, to engage the partners at the nationals so that they can approve Bor Transit Center, so that these people can access the service.
Mading says more than 700 returnees are expected to arrive in Bor this week from Renk, and Djongle authorities do not have the capacity to respond to the needs of all those people. Manase Lomule Uwaya, national chairperson of the RRC, say they have no food and is appealing to humanitarian agencies to intervene.
So when we have issues such as this, we rely entirely on our partners. So what we do is we will try to talk to those partners that are working with us in Djongolay so they can give a helping hand.
According to Lomule, since August 1st, more than 850,000 South Sudanese have spontaneously returned to the country, most of them being from Sudan, where two military factions have been locked in a bloody battle for control since April 15th. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
UN agencies warn that health conditions are deteriorating across Sudan and neighboring countries like South Sudan as growing numbers of people flee the ramped-up fighting between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Before the conflict erupted on April 15th, 4.5 million Sudanese already were displaced, more than 3.7 million as displaced people inside Sudan, and another 800,000 as refugees in Chad, South Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. Since the rival generals went to war, the UN Refugee Agency reports nearly an equal number, more than 4 million people, have become newly displaced. It says it is deeply worried about the health conditions in refugee and IDP camps inside Sudan, as well as among those arriving in neighboring countries. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler calls the situation inside Sudan untenable, with needs far outweighing available resources. For example, he notes White Nile State lacks essential medicines and is short of staff to care for the ill. He says this is severely hampering health and nutrition services for more than 144,000 newly displaced refugees in all 10 refugee camps in the region.
As many families have been on the move for weeks with very little food and medicine, rising malnutrition rates, disease outbreaks, and related deaths continue to be observed. In addition, severe cholera and malaria are expected in the coming months due to flooding from the continuing rains and inadequate sanitation facilities.
The UNHCR reports there have been more than 300 deaths, mainly among children under 5 years, due to measles and malnutrition between May 15th and July 17th. It warns health services are being stretched thin for lack of funds, supplies, and chronic shortages in health staff. Now, in its fourth month of conflict, the World Health Organization reports Sudan's insecurity, as well as limited access to medicines, medical supplies, electricity, and water, pose a challenge to the delivery of health care. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says attacks on health facilities are increasing, preventing the sick and wounded from getting needed care. Between April 15th and July 31st, he says WHO has verified 53 attacks on health care, causing 11 deaths and 38 injuries.
Attacks on health care are a gross violation of international humanitarian law and the right to health. They must stop. Humanitarian workers need assurances of safety and security in order to continue delivering critical humanitarian and health response.
The Federal Ministry of Health reports 12,200 people have been injured and 1,205 killed since April 15th. Figures UN agencies believe are greatly underestimated. UNHCR and WHO warn the lives of many people are hanging by a thread. They are appealing for more donor support to save the lives that will be lost if that help is not forthcoming. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Intelligence assessments say Sudan's rapid support forces have the resources and skill to sustain its war against the Sudanese army for years to come. A little over a week ago marked 100 days of the fighting in Sudan, with an estimated 3,000 people killed and more than 3 million displaced. Darren Taylor has more.
The conflict's been the most intense in the capital, Khartoum, and in the western Darfur region. 20 years ago, many current rapid support force fighters, including leader Mohamed Hemeti Dagalo, were members of Arab militias known as the Janjaweed, which terrorized Darfur. Their task, says former United States intelligence analyst Cameron Hudson, was to wipe out Sudanese of African ethnicity for then-ruler Omar al-Bashir.
They became responsible for what we would consider to be the most kind of gruesome aspects of the killing in Darfur. Because they were on the ground, because they were coming in on horseback and camelback, they were carrying out the rapes. They were carrying out the person-to-person killing, the destroying of villages and water points, the destruction of livestock, the looting, all of these kind of very personal crimes.
Hudson was speaking during a recent Atlantic Council webinar. The International Criminal Court indicted al-Bashir and others for genocide in Darfur, but they haven't been prosecuted. Al-Bashir was overthrown in 2019 and remains in the custody of the Sudanese army. Hudson says with so many conflicts unresolved in Sudan, it's fertile ground for the present fighting to expand into a full-blown civil war and possibly a regional war.
As this fighting has gone on, we have seen new factions emerge. Arab tribes from Darfur, we're seeing opposition groups from the Nuba Mountains begin to take opportunities available to them to strike. This is a conflict that affects every corner of the country. It affects every tribe, group, ethnicity, socioeconomic class of the country, and every major city throughout the country. It is really a far more devastating and comprehensive conflict than anything that we've really witnessed in Sudan's modern history.
The RSF fought as mercenaries in Libya and Yemen, building a cash reserve that allowed it to go on mass recruitment drives. Hudson says it's getting the upper hand in Khartoum because regular reinforcements are coming in from Darfur.
It's really, I think, the appeal of the rapid support forces right now and its leader, General Dagalo Hemeti. This idea that for so long these peripheral areas have been marginalized and that they are going to bring this violence that has always plagued the peripheral communities, they're going to bring it to the capital, they're going to bring it to the elites of the country, and they are going to make them feel some measure of what these other communities have been feeling for decades now.
VOA tried repeatedly to get reaction from the RSF to Hudson's comments, but their spokesman never responded. Several attempts by Saudi Arabia, the United States, the African Union, and other parties to negotiate lasting ceasefires in Sudan have failed, and talks have been stalled for weeks. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a dental clinic tries to reassure South Sudanese with missing teeth that implants are not that scary. Stay tuned.
Questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. There has been an uptick in the number of cholera outbreaks worldwide reported this year so far, and the most affected region is Africa. 25 countries have reported cases since the start of the year worldwide. The World Health Organization says because of the multiple and simultaneous outbreaks combined with a shortage of resources, including the oral cholera vaccine, it continues to label the global risk as very high. Patrick Otim, the WHO's regional incident manager in Africa, tells me that although new outbreaks have occurred in East Africa this year, there is some good news in the latest situation report regarding South Sudan.
The latest country to report cholera outbreak is Uganda. It brings the number of countries within Africa that have been affected by cholera this year to 15 countries. However, out of those 15, over 5 countries have not reported any cholera cases for over 4 weeks. So we would consider that the transmission in those countries is not active. So the other 10 countries, most of them have been having a decline in cases. The 5 countries that have not reported any cholera cases include South Sudan, which contained the cholera way back. Zambia has gone over 4 weeks without any case. South Africa has also gone over 4 weeks without a case. And then we have Eswatini, which also contained that, the cholera cases. And then Malawi is almost towards the tail end of its outbreak. In fact, this afternoon we received a communication from the government of Malawi that they have lifted the public health declaration. Back in December, they declared cholera as a public health emergency, and that has been lifted.
And those countries that you mentioned where there's no more cholera cases being reported, like South Sudan, what do you attribute the change to?
South Sudan early in the year had an outbreak. It was a limited outbreak in an internally displaced people's camp in Bentiu. So that one was quickly managed because it's a concentrated population within the internally displaced people's camp in Bentiu town. So that was responded to and contained. But that's also a population that was vaccinated with the oral cholera vaccine in Bentiu. So they are fairly partially protected against the cholera.
That's a huge camp, isn't it? There's hundreds of thousands of people there.
Yes. There are hundreds of thousands of people in that camp.
Tell me about the not so good news and where you've seen cases break out more recently in Africa.
So the not so good news is Uganda. Though it's a fairly small outbreak, they have had outbreak in 2 districts of Kayunga and Namayingo. As of Friday, I think in total they had over 40 something cases. It's not a very big outbreak, and they are responding. We are supporting them. They should be able to bring that under control. The second one then was in Ethiopia, in the northern part of the country, in Amhara region, where they had an outbreak in an area called Kwara. And the area is also close to a location that is hosting some of the people who have fled the conflict in Sudan. In the last few days, you have heard that the security situation in Amhara has deteriorated. So that's a point of concern for us, because then somehow the response actions for cholera have not been as smooth as they would have been, and we're already beginning to see a downward trend.
You often have these outbreaks like you're describing in places like Ethiopia and Amhara region and Uganda when there's a large influx of people and there's overcrowded conditions and there's poor sanitation, right?
Yes, an overcrowding of people, poor sanitation, those are all big risk factors for cholera outbreak. The cholera outbreak in Amhara, for instance, happened at a religious holy site. It's a holy site where people go, and there's common water that people go and perform religious rituals into. So the water got contaminated and that outbreak. So it has happened before as well.
That's Patrick Otem. He is the World Health Organization's Regional Incident Manager in Africa. Otem was speaking with me from Brazzaville, the capital of Congo. And on more health-related news, a South Sudanese dental clinic has started a one-month dental implant campaign to raise awareness among school children and the public at large. The managing director of the Juba-based Ozone Specialized Dental Clinic says dental implant services are very expensive in Juba, due in large part to a lack of companies that produce the items needed in surgery. Juliana Shiapai has the details for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Mabior Ring Deng, managing director of the Ozone Clinic, says he invited other dental specialists from Sudan, Egypt, and Kenya to come to South Sudan so they could educate the public about the new services at the clinic. Since August 1st, Dr. Deng says he and the other dentists have been offering free consultation with the goal of helping at least 50 patients per week to understand the benefits of dental implants.
We are going to just introduce the implant, which is implantology. It's the new service in South Sudan. It's the first time to be conducting South Sudan here. The aim of the campaign, we just wish to increase the awareness of the replacement of the natural tools. When you use the natural tools, you can just replace it with the new one, with the modern, not over the world, which is called the implant. It's simply, simple surgery can be done using the clinic.
Dentist Nivin Gama says the campaign is not just about offering free consultations. She says the group also plans to conduct community outreach in primary schools in Juba to educate the public about good oral health.
In our campaign, we'll also target the Bullock Eye Center, yes, people with disability, because I know, in fact, it's hard for them to maintain their oral hygiene, and also we'll just try to educate them how to keep the oral health and whatever, their mouth should be clean, like easy steps just to teach them how to do it.
Dr. Sarah Saleh is a Sudanese periodontist who moved to South Sudan when conflict broke out in Khartoum and other Sudanese cities, and performs implant surgeries at the Ozone Specialized Dental Clinic. Dr. Saleh says patients who have dental issues should see a dentist as soon as they start to feel the problem.
If you do accident, come to the dentist as soon as possible, because within first 24 hours, we can do the operation with high success rate. It is implant, so it is an implant. It will be felt. So the first 24 hours is the goal of the success of the implant.
19-year-old Chol Mabeng, a South Sudanese secondary school student, got involved in an accident while riding a motorcycle. He lost 5 teeth and broke his upper tooth bone. Mabeng advises all boda-boda or motorcycle operators in South Sudan to ride with caution, saying he has lost his smile in an accident which is going to take a long time to restore.
If you do accident, come to the dentist as soon as possible, because within first 24 hours, we can do the operation with high success rate. It is implant, so it is an implant. It will be felt. So the first 24 hours is the goal of the success of the implant.
Dr. Mabior says people should not fear a visit to the dentist. He says getting implant is an easy surgery that can be done in minutes without any risk involved. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
With the conclusion of the Washington Mandela Summit here in Washington, members of the Young African Leaders Initiative are heading back home to follow through on their ideas to change Africa for the better. One of the several South Sudanese Yellow Fellows this year is looking to create South Sudan's first innovation hub, as we hear from VOA's Anthony Labruto in Washington.
Fergak Malek, CEO of Beat Tech, an entrepreneurial company focusing on youth employment and economic empowerment, centralizing his resources to one location is the first step in helping to create a competitive private sector economy in South Sudan.
That's why I started training on entrepreneurship. I do train young people to come up with their businesses. I work on their business plans. I guide them and coach them through ideation, prototype, market entry, and growth. And besides this, all this, I've been doing them in different venues. That's how I felt like I need an innovation hub that will be structured in one place, whereby all these activities and services that will be building and enable the private sector to thrive.
One of the biggest barriers to success in South Sudan is the country's financial system, which is riddled with corruption, nepotism, and a lack of trained professionals. As the youngest country in Africa, South Sudan looked outward to fill many of the country's high-skill economic needs and monetary loans. Especially for venture capital, the country's lack of financial services means putting many ambitious ideas on the back burner.
One of the main things is that a lot of young people have brilliant ideas, but unfortunately they don't have resources or finances to kickstart those ideas. Yet the institutions with resources or money, but they don't know how to access the right people whom they can invest in. And this is kind of a mismatch, because mostly there are no loans given by the banks, because the only collateral right now accepted by the banks in South Sudan is land. But a lot of young people don't even own those lands. So it's difficult to really build on an idea and get that direct funding.
Venture funding isn't the only obstacle facing young entrepreneurs. Malek believes, for one thing, too many young people like himself look for jobs from the government or NGOs.
There is no any single sector that is run by South Sudanese in South Sudan. So I feel like things don't need to go that way. Young people graduate and start to look for jobs from the government and UN agencies, but government cannot employ all of us. Private sector can take all of us.
Now that his Yali Fellowship is concluded, Gak Malek is taking a much-needed vacation in Kentucky before heading back to South Sudan to play a new role.
Now I know better how I can build those young people and connect them to the right people who can invest in them. So I'll be going back more to be a bridge between the innovators and the investors.
Malek was one of 10 South Sudanese young African leaders selected to join the 2023 Mandela Fellowship. Anthony Labruto, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps it up for us this Tuesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast live, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Sokote by Mama Tutu. Have been listening to Mama Tutu with the song Sokote. I am your host, Carol Van Dam, in Washington, and on behalf of our engineer, Kilo Williams, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for joining us. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.